This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Alive and Picking for this Saturday morning here on KPFK Los Angeles, listener-supported Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California. My name is Mary Catherine Alden and I'm delighted to welcome back to my program this morning several musketeers, not all of them, but three of the four musketeers. My guests this morning are Joe Frazier, Jim Moran, and Art Padel. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Mary Catherine.
Good morning, Mary Catherine.
And what delights have you brought in for us this morning?
Well, this is Jim Moran here from the folk blog comp video, comparative video 101.blogspot.com. And the theme we've chosen for today is called the Northern Sound in Folk Music. And we're starting with a kind of a thesis here, and that is that today you don't hear the term folk music used very much. I was struck after we did a performance together up at Big Bear last July when Art wrote on his blog, Art Podell here, of Art and Paul and formerly the New Christian Minstrels, that it was folk music the way he remembered it. And what you see today, and I think the guys will agree with this, is a heavy emphasis on what people call roots music. And roots music is a kind of a new record company sort of designation that has sort of supplanted folk music. And the thing about it is it's great music and there's a lot of really good stuff. And I, for one, have always liked the thought that you could throw in Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash and some of the younger people like the Abbott Brothers and Mumford & Sons and so on under the same kind of broad tent that we used to just kind of talk about folk music in. I'm reminded that George Ween, who was the promoter who with Oscar Brand, who's coming up here in a minute, and Pete Seeger and Theo Bacall, started the Newport Folk Festival, which he envisioned as a large tent kind of event in which all the different stripes of folk music would be represented. The problem with the way roots music has evolved, however, as a radio station and music company phenomenon, is it tends to be focused on two specific strains of American folk music, African American blues from the South and white Appalachian music. Now, the thesis of our program here today is that there is an entire body of American folk music largely representative of what was happening in New York and Greenwich Village and Chicago and Boston 50 years ago. And that is what we're going to call the Northern Sound in Folk. It has a Canadian influence. It has an international influence. Certainly it has an Irish influence. And as our time here winds out, we'd like to present some of the artists and some of the songs that we think represent a kind of, well, we could call it an alternative view of folk music, or, if you will, an alternative view of roots music, the real roots. And we're going to start today. I've got the first little segment here, and we're going to be talking to each other with someone that I believe that Art at least probably met at some point or other, the legendary Oscar Brand, who is 91 years old. Joe, you met him too?
Oh, I was also, I not only met Oscar, but I worked with him in translating some Kurt Weill songs he wanted help on from German. And I also was on his TV equivalent show to Hootenanny. He had his own version of Hootenanny in Canadian TV, and I was on there several times with the Chad Mitchell Trio. Oscar's a wonderful man.
Yeah, and there are videos of that on YouTube all over the place.
I remember, this is Art Podell here, by the way. I remember as a high school student sneaking away to Greenwich Village to, they had various theaters where they had off-Broadway or off Bleecker Street plays, and at midnight they would close down the theater and they'd run concerts, and that's where I first saw Oscar Brand, and that's where I think I first started getting a much broader exposure to folk music. And Joe, you're an old group musician. Remember in the old days when it was important if you had a group that you had to find a bass player?
Oh, I still do.
Yeah, and you know that I just noticed that today I think it's important for us old folkies that whenever we go anywhere we bring an intellectual with us instead of a bass player.
or as the Chad Mitchell Trio has currently with Ron Greenstein, an intellectual bass player.
Right, but at least we've got Jim here.
Well, intellectual might be a stretch. You need someone with a memory left. Okay,
there you go.
Which mine is fading quickly as well. Oscar Brand is still with us. He's 91 years old, and he still does every Saturday night his weekly folk music radio show since 1946 out of New York City.
It's on WBAI,
which is our sister station. It's on WBAI, sister station to KPFK, so it's an NPR station.
No, Pacifica.
Pacifica. Excuse me, Pacifica Radio, okay. And you can catch it on the web and everything, and he's still just an antic wit. He's one of the funniest guys you're ever going to hear. But he's also someone born in Toronto, as I recall, and he came to New York City for college in the middle 40s, I think, and stayed and got involved in the folk music scene in Washington Square, which was always there, and eventually immersed himself in American folk music and became quite an expert on it, as we're going to hear here in a minute. Probably over the almost 65 years or longer, I think his first record came out in 1948, he's probably best known by those who love folk music for this huge number of bawdy songs and ballads and military songs that he did. Most of his albums had themes to them. What people sometimes don't remember is that he was just a phenomenal balladeer. I mean, he had a real fidelity to the kind of traditional construct of folk music. I'm going to hear a little bit of that here in our first set, okay? We have three from different periods related to Oscar Brand, okay? First, we're going to hear his sort of definitive take on one of the great American folk songs of the 1830s, the Here I Ye Was Arisin'. It was also done after Brand by Burl Ives and the Weavers, right? It's a delightful song. This recording is from the 1990s, so it's later in Oscar's career, right? Second in this set, we're going to hear him do his take on a traditional American ballad, Billy the Kid. This recording goes back to the early 50s. It's analog. And those of you who are acute folk fans will recognize in the melody the tune that Woody Guthrie, shall we say, borrowed for one of his great songs, a Weaver's hit called So Long It's Been Good to Know You, comes from Billy the Kid. And lastly, and I'm going to ask Joe Frazier to pronounce this for me if he can, okay, probably the single song that's most associated with Oscar Brand is his rendering from German of a Pennsylvania song that in English is referred to as When I First Came to This Land.
You got it. It's Pennsylvania Dutch, Pennsylvania German, which is where I'm from, and it's called Wann ich von dem Land reikom, which means when I first came to this land.
Rand, he did a delightful, not quite literal rendering. He translated it, but he kind of smoothed it up, and we're going to listen to probably the most famous pop folk version of Brand's translation, by the Limelighters. So, our first Oscar Brand segment, starting with the Here I Ye Was Arisin', followed by Billy the Kid, followed by the Limelighters doing Brands When I First Came to This Land.
We was 40 miles from Buffalo. Forget it, I never shall. What a horrible storm we had one night on the Erie Canal. We were plumb full up of barley. I was jock full up of rye. And the captain, he looked down on me with a goddamn wicked eye. A goddamn wicked eye. And the Erie was rising and the gin was getting low. I scarcely think we'll get a drink till we get to Buffalo. Get to Buffalo. Now the cook, she had bright red hair and a blazing yellow dress. So we hoisted her up to the top of the mast as a signal of distress. But the winds begin to whistle and the waters begin to swell. So I had to cut that signal loose on the Hirai Canal, the Hirai Canal. And the Hirai was rising now, the gin was getting low. I scarcely think we'll get a drink till we get to Buffalo, get to Buffalo. Halfway out of Syracuse, a pirate I spy. I could see the skull and crossbones there, he's waving up on high. I shouted to the captain, I said, heist the flag of truce. He says, you drunken bum, it's a Mary Jane. Out of Syracuse, out of Syracuse. But the Erie was a-rising and the gin was getting low. I scarcely think we'll get a drink till we get to the Buffalo, get to the Buffalo. By the time we got to Buffalo, the hind mule, he was dead. The pilot had a broken leg, so I shot him through the head. The girls are all the police gazette, the captain, he's in jail. And I'm only left to tell the tale. Left to tell the tale. He was riding and the ship was getting low. I don't care if we will get a drink till we get to the Buffalo. Get to the Buffalo. Get to Buffalo.
I'll sing you a true song of Billy the Kid. I'll sing of the desperate deed that he did, way out in New Mexico long, long ago, when a man's only friend was his own 44. When Billy the Kid was a very young lad, in old Silver City he went to the bad, way out in the West with a gun in his hand. At the age of 12 years he killed his first man. It was on the same night when poor Billy he died. He said to his friends, I am not satisfied. There are 21 men I will put bullets through, and Sheriff Pat Garrett must make 22. Now this is how Billy the Kid met his fate. The bright moon was shining, the hour was late. Shot down by Pat Garrett, who once was his friend, the young outlaw's life now came to its end. There's many a man with a face fine and fair, starts out in life with a chance to be square, but just like poor Billy, he wanders astray, and he loses his life in the very same way.
When I first came to this land, I was not a wealthy man, so I got myself a farm. And I did what I could. So I got myself a farm, called my farm the muscle in my arm. But the land was sweet and good, and I did what I could. That farm had neither dog nor cat, not a soul to holler at. So I got myself a wife, and I did what I could. So I got myself a wife, called my wife, run for your life. But the land was sweet and good, and I did what I could. When a year had passed away, I came home one summer day, found I'd got myself a son, and I did what I could. Found I've got myself a son, called my son, my work's done. But the land was sweet and good, and I did what I could. Well, he grew up and left the farm, brought a wife back on his arm. Soon the rooms were full of kids, and I did what I could. Soon the rooms were full of kids, called those kids, flip your lids. But the land was sweet and good, and I did what I could. When I first came to this land, I was not a wealthy man. Now I've built my family tree, yes, I did what I could. Now I've built my family tree, I call that tree enough for me. But the land was sweet and good, and I did what I could. And I called my farm the muscle in my arm, called my wife, run for your life. Called my son, my work's done. Called those kids, flip your lids. Family tree's enough for me. But the land was sweet and good, and I did what I could.
And that was the Limelighters doing Oscar Brand's rewrite of an old German Pennsylvania Dutch song called When I First Came to This Land. Brand noted he occasionally posts on mudcat.org, which is a UK site that everybody who loves folk music should know. He mentioned that he rewrote the song after translating from German in 1948, saying that the original Pennsylvania Dutch song had a tune very similar to Oleana, which is another song from the region. He said that he turned it into something that sounded a little bit like Ba Ba Black Sheep. Though if you look at the original German lyric and his side-by-side, it's very close. So, the Limelighters doing Oscar Brand's When I First Came to This Land, Brand himself doing Billy the Kid, and the Irie Was Arisin'. This is Jim Moran from the blog comparativevideo101.blogspot.com with my two other musketeers. We're missing George Grove of the Kingston Trio today, Father
George,
Joe Frazier.
George, we miss you. If you're listening...
Yes, come back, George, please, yeah. The next one.
George happens to be in the studio this week recording the first Kingston Trio album of original material in 25 years.
A working folk singer, folks.
Absolutely. A very working folk singer, as we found out.
He took a gig rather than
come you imagine
here to
that?
Be with
well,
us at 6 o'clock in the morning. Can you believe that?
Bob Shane said, George, we need a banjo player to do this record, so that's what George does. We're looking forward to having him with us when Mary Catherine is good enough to invite us back. Okay. Brand also had, Oscar Brand, had an interesting take. He's quite a prolific author as well. He's written 7 or 8 books that I know of, and... one of them was in 1962, and it was called The Balladmongers, The Rise of the Modern Folk Song. And he wanted to distinguish what he thought of folk music as opposed to what was happening in 62, which is really the height of the popular folk music sort of explosion. And he says in The Balladmongers, when I refer to traditional song, I'm applying the definition promulgated by the International Folk Music Council. And Oscar quotes, music that has been submitted to the process of oral transmission. It is the product of evolution and is dependent on the circumstances of continuity, variation, and selection. And that's a mouthful.
My question is it curable?
Even for an English teacher, okay? But that does take us to our next version or our next manifestation of the Northern sound in folk. One of the things that neither the Mississippi Delta nor the Appalachians had was the profound international influence that you found from immigrants in the northern cities, like, again, Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, and New York. And New York was, of course, the hotbed of folk music back in the 40s and 50s. And one of the interesting effects of that was the introduction, or maybe I should say reintroduction, of genuine Irish folk music into the American popular music mainstream. It's hard for us to imagine today, with the plethora of groups called the Celtic Woman and Celtic Thunder and Celtic what have you, that 50 years ago, about the only Irish music that most Americans knew who weren't into folk music would have been Dennis Day singing Galway Bay, or Bing Crosby singing Going My Way. The more sophisticated ones might have known some of the operatic tenors that the Ireland produced over many years, and the names are just flipped out of my mind at 6:15 in the morning. John McCormick would be probably the most famous. What they didn't know much about, what none of us did, was the kind of balladry and the traditional music that now virtually everybody in America knows. And this is one of those phenomena that's actually traceable to a single kind of set of circumstances, and that had to do with a rather large Irish family from Carrick-on-Shure, Tipperary, called the Clancys, right? 11 children, eventually four or five of whom joined the group called the Clancy Brothers. Now, they didn't start as a group. They were a bunch of poor Irish kids. Paddy Clancy was born in 1924, was the first to emigrate after World War II to New York City with the design of becoming an actor. He was quickly followed by his next younger brother, Tommy, born Tommy Clancy, born in 1928. And then several years later by the youngest, William, or Willie, who's known professionally as Liam Clancy. All, sadly, have passed away. The phenomenon, the moment, the kind of flashpoint moment, occurred when Diane Hamilton Guggenheim, who was the heir to one of the Guggenheim fortunes, developed an interest in folk music, in part from an association with Gene Ritchie, the great Appalachian dulcimer and singer, dulcimer player and singer, who is also still with us. And Hamilton went to Ireland. Diane Hamilton Guggenheim went to Ireland looking for folk songs, which was kind of a popular pastime in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And while she was there, she ran into the 19-year-old Liam Clancy and was struck by his singing and his general personality. And she took him with him on a, she took Clancy with her on a tour of Ireland looking for folk songs, and she went to the house of Sarah Makeham, who was also a famous folk performer and a musicologist without portfolio. Okay, she knew thousands of songs, and it was at that time that Liam Clancy met Tommy Makeham. The two of them eventually emigrated to Canada and the United States and joined the older Clancy brothers in New York, doing informal gigs in the village and pursuing acting careers. Eventually, with Hamilton Guggenheim's financing, they started their own label, which was Tradition Records, which recorded a lot of the popular folk artists, or rather the traditional folk artists of the 1950s, including Ed McCurdy and a whole bunch of others. And eventually, the group amalgamated into the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makeham, who, as a group, appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1962, and of course that was a leading variety show, TV show of the time. And because a previous act had gotten sick, they had 16 minutes and did five songs and launched not only their own career, but every Celtic-flavored musician in America owes something to that appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. In the late 50s, though, the Clancys and Makeham appeared largely as soloists. And as a matter of fact, at the first Newport Folk Festival in 59, Pat Clancy and Tommy Makeham appeared separately, okay, and in duos, but not together. And Liam Clancy became such a fine balladeer that he influenced a whole generation of younger musicians, including, as we'll see later, Bob Dylan. So we'd like to do a little set here now of the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makeham. First is a group doing one of their all-time favorite songs, The Jug of Punch. And following that, we're going to hear Tommy Makeham's signature song, The Bard of Armagh, Armagh being one of the four ancient kingdoms of Ireland, and Macon being from Armagh. This second recording, by the way, is from their first Tradition album and was recorded on a tape recorder in Paddy Clancy's kitchen in 1959. And believe me, it will sound like it. Okay, and then we're going to hear Tommy Macon much later solo from the 1990s doing the stirring Irish ballad, Roddy McCorley. So, the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Macon together and separately.
There's a lovely drinking song called A Jug of Punch. Punch is made here in America, apparently, but rum or something like that. But in Ireland, it's naturally enough made with Irish whiskey. You have a glass and a spoon, some hot water, a squeeze of lemon, some sugar, some cloves.
No, you don't need the cloves. You know.
You don't really need the hot water either. But it's a lovely drink anyway. And this is a song that an old man might sing in the evening, an old man whose whole life had been sweetened by the drinking of punch.
Yes, and
he sort of growls it out one evening as the world is slipping out of focus. Starts out very quietly and very poetically and rapidly deteriorates. Like a good night of drinking. Jug of punch when they're in tune. Are you in tune? Anyway, all good people should join in the chorus of this song. Anybody who's ever tasted punch.
One pleasant evening in the month of June, as I was sitting with my glass and spoon, a small bird sat on an ivy bunch, and the song he sang was the jug of punch. Toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay, toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay. A small bird sat on an ivy bunch, and the song he sang was the jug of punch. What more diversion can a man desire than to sit him down by a snub-tor fire? Upon his knee a pretty wench, I and on the table a jug of punch.
Toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay, toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay. Upon his knee a pretty wench, I and on the table a jug of punch.
Let the doctors come with all their art, they'll make no impression upon my heart. Even the cream will forget his punch when he's snug outside of a jug of punch.
And toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay, toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay. Even the cream will forget his punch when he's snug outside of a jug of punch.
And if I get drunk, oh well, the money's me own. And them don't like me, they can leave me alone.
I
can make fiddle hand, I'll weather me more. And I'll be welcome wherever I go.
And toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay, toor-a-loor-a-loo, toor-a-loor-a-lay. I can make fiddle hand, I'll weather me more.
Poor Irish harbour, and scorn not the strains
of his old withered hand. But remember his fingers, they once could move sharply to raise up the memory of his dear native land. At a fair or awake, I could twist my shillelagh, or trip through a jig with my brogues bound with straw. And all the pretty colours around me assembled, loved her bold Philum Brady, the bard of Armagh. Oh, how I long to muse on the days of my boyhood. No fourscore and years have flitted since then, but a glimmer's sweet reflection has every young joy shared. For the merry-hearted boys make the best of all men. And when Sergeant Death in his cold arms shall embrace me, will lull me to sleep with sweet Edinburgh by the side of my captain, my young wife will place me. Then forget Philum Brady, the bard of Armagh.
Oh, see the fleet-foot horse of men, whose feet with paces worn, from farmstead and from fisher's cot, along the banks of Bann. They come with vengeance in their eyes, too late are they, for young Roddy McCauley goes to die on the bridge of Toon today. Up the narrow street he stepped, smiling proud and young, about the hemp rope on his neck the golden ringlet clung. There is never a tear in his blue eyes, both sad and bright are they, as young Roddy McCauley goes to die on the bridge of Doom today. When he last stepped off that street, his shining flag in hand, behind him marched in Bryn Mawr, a stalwart hairless band. For Antrim town, for Antrim town, he led them to the fray, and young Roddy McCauley goes to die on the bridge of Doon today.
Thank you.
That was Tommy Makem solo doing the great Irish Revolutionary Ballad from the Wexford Rising of 1798, Roddy McCorley, preceded by Makem doing The Bard of Armagh, his signature song, and the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem doing The Jug of Punch. This is Jim Moran here from the blog comparativevideo101.blogspot.com at the good grace, or from the good grace of Mary Catherine Aldrin, the regular host of the show, with Art Podell of Art and Paul and the New Christy Minstrels and Joe Frazier of the Chad Mitchell Trio. I've got a couple more songs before I'm going to give the floor to Joe. The last of the northern influence kind of people that came from Ireland and arguably as important as Tommy Makem was Liam Clancy, whom Bob Dylan referred to as the best ballad singer he had ever heard. And we have an example here of that with Liam Clancy doing probably what became his signature song, The Patriot Game, which is written by Dominic Behan, the younger brother of the famous Irish playwright Brendan Behan. It's based on a real incident that happened, I believe, on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve in 1956, when two teenage IRA volunteers, Fergal O'Hanlon and Sean Soot, attempted to bomb a barracks of the Royal Ulster Constabulary, which was a police force that the nationalist Irish just absolutely hated in the north of Ireland. Both of them were shot and killed before they could plant the bombs. And Behan wrote this song based on, actually, interestingly, on an old American Appalachian folk song that was originally intended to be a kind of a rallying nationalist anthem. When Liam Clancy got hold of it, he enraged Behan by dropping two of the probably more controversial verses that endorsed the IRA action against the English. And the net effect of it was that Liam Clancy's version of The Patriot Game becomes a kind of commentary on the waste of war. A very young Bob Dylan heard this song, and as he did with about a half a dozen songs sung by Liam Clancy, used the melody to create some of his own early works. So we're going to hear now Liam Clancy doing The Patriot Game from Carnegie Hall in 1962, followed by Joe Frazier and the Chad Mitchell Trio doing their version of Bob Dylan's With God on Our Side that is based on that song.
Come on, you young rebels, and list while I sing. For the love of one's country is a terrible thing. It banishes fear with the speed of a flame, and it makes us all part of the patriot game. My name is O'Han, and I'm just gone 16. My home is in Monaghan, where I was weaned. I've learned all my life cruel England to blame, and so I'm a part of the patriot game. Barely 2 years since I wandered away with a local battalion of the bold IRA. I'd read of our heroes, and I wanted the same to play off my part in the patriot game. This island of ours has for long been half free. 6 counties are under John Bull's tyranny. So I gave up my boyhood to drill and to train, to play my own part in the patriot game. And now as I lie here, my body all holds, I think of those traitors who bargained and sold. I wish that my rifle had given the same to those quislings who sold out the patriot game.
That set was Liam Clancy first doing The Patriot Game, written by Dominic Behan, and that was followed by Bob Dylan's rewrite of that, as with God on Our Side, is performed by the Chad Mitchell Trio.
Who was that baritone in that last?
I don't know. That was just an amazing baritone part. Speaking of baritones in the Chad Mitchell Trio, I'd like to pitch the show over to Joe Frazier of the Chad Mitchell Trio and his take on the northern sound in folk music.